The Time Traveler's Guide to Not Getting Caught. Chapter 19, That Time I Was on the Maiden Voyage of the Titanic. All right, team, we did it. We reached the last chapter. Aren't you feeling accomplished you got this far into listening to a podcast?
I don't know about you, but if I were listening to this, I would have stopped once I wasn't able to participate in that orgy in ancient Athens. Or the subpar Napoleon chapter. I mean, I'm sorry all of my travels through time couldn't be amazing stories. I'm just here to report the facts. But here we are now, on the last chapter. But it's a long one, so it's pretty much like two chapters, but that shouldn't deter you from wanting to listen to the ending now. It should make you even more excited to listen to it. There are a few things I should mention before I get to the Titanic. The first is that I was a bit upset I spent so much of my 1940s money on a house that I only used for one day. And you know what? I was also annoyed that I had to buy that Ford as well. Even though I could always get more money, there was just something in me that didn't like spending it. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's because my money didn't really feel earned. Could that be it? Is there some sort of hidden moral in this book? You know, some sort of underlying theme that would help elevate my story? I don't think so. But if you want to invent some sort of moral, then go right ahead. Anyway, I go back to the present and I already know I want to go to the Titanic, but before I go back in time again, I would need to take care of some business, like watching The Mask and The Number 23. For starters, The Number 23 is a really bad movie, and I do not recommend it. I don't remember who told me it was good. Probably Jefferson Davis, that Nancy boy, bastard bitch, sodomite. But the good news is that after all these years, The Mask still holds up. And you know what? I even gave The Majestic a chance. And I gotta say, I found it quite delightful. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I didn't actually watch The Majestic. And that is just not true at all. It was on in the background as I played Candy Crush on my phone, and from what I heard, it sounded like a lovely movie, and Jim Carrey sounded like he gave a great performance. After I watched The Majestic, I decided to watch Titanic because that's where I was going to go next, but I start off with the original Titanic movie, and then I watch all the other iterations before I finally get to the James Cameron version. It was actually a really boring binge. I mean, the only good Titanic was the James Cameron one. And look, to defend Rose, I really don't think that Jack could have fit on the raft with her. Now, hear me out. I understand there's room for him to get on with her, but the raft was already submerged in the water, and if he gets on top, the whole thing's going to sink. So I mean, yeah, they definitely should have tried to both get on, but I really think that they would have both died if they had shared the raft. I mean, Jack's a hero. He sacrifices his life for Rose, and all anyone can talk about is how selfish she is for not offering the raft. And that just isn't fair at all. In her defense, Jack could have said, "Hey Rose, can you move over and see if I can fit on it?" He knew what he was doing. He knew he was gonna die. I mean, there were a bunch of dead bodies around them. He could have tried to make a raft out of them and survived. All I'm saying is that there were other ways that he could have tried to survive. You know, as I'm thinking about it now, I wonder if Jack really is a hero because, I mean, sure, he saves her life, but now he's leaving her behind to live in an era that didn't even have CD players. Anyway, I'm on Team James Cameron in that it wasn't possible for both of them to survive on that little piece of wood. After I watched Titanic, I took a bath and I added bubbles because I had earned it. I feel like bubble baths get a bad rap. For some reason, it became a feminine thing to do, but bubbles are really nice when you're taking a soak, and I don't think there should be gender assigned to bubble baths. And I think the same should be true for manicures and pedicures. Why can't men enjoy their bodies being pampered? I mean, at the end of the day, we're all just animals that like our bodies getting rubbed and our nails getting painted, am I right? After I took my bubble bath, I heated up some taquitos and reflected about all of my journeys I had gone on so far. Present-day New Delhi, present-day New York, 18th century Philadelphia, ancient Athens, prehistoric Africa, Renaissance Rome, Pompeii, French Revolution Poland, 1920 Chicago, 2010, 1600 England, the Wild West, ancient Egypt, 1860 South Carolina, 1969 Woodstock, the Age of Enlightenment England, and 1940s Los Angeles. Just saying them makes me feel really accomplished. I mean, I know all I had to do was look up the tudes for every place and just press some buttons on my watch and travel there, But I still followed through and actually went, you know? I made some cool discoveries and witnessed other people make some cool discoveries. And yet, of all my journeys thus far, none were as crazy as the disaster that was my experience on the Titanic. Anyway, before I made my way to the Titanic, I decided I would need to dress the part, but that's when I realized I had no idea when and where the Titanic departs. After a quick wiki search in which I definitely did not get caught going down a rabbit hole reading about various Jim Carrey movies and winding up learning all about his childhood where he was at one point homeless and living in a car, it turned out I needed to travel to April 10th, 1912, Southampton, England. I figured I didn't really need to get money for that time period because I was going to be on an all-inclusive cruise. I would just need to figure out how to get on the ship. But I didn't think it would be that difficult sneaking onto a ship that was about to crash and kill most of their passengers. Did most of the passengers die? Or did most survive? What do I care? I would be long gone before it ever hit that iceberg. So I put on the same clothes I wore for the 1920 Chicago trip because they were close enough to what Jack Dawson was wearing when he was on the Titanic. I put the date and tudes in and the watch asked me to confirm, and did I confirm? You bet your ass I confirmed. And then, there I was, staring up at the Titanic. And let me tell you, it was huge. Just absolutely Titanic. To think one day it would be under the water and visited by James Cameron, I couldn't believe I was looking at the same thing James Cameron would look at one day. It was the closest I had ever felt to James Cameron. I wonder if James Cameron will ever read about my journeys or listen to them on audiobook. Probably not. But if you're James Cameron and you're listening to this and want to know what the Titanic was like before it sunk, feel free to email me at anonymoustimetraveler69@hotmail.com so that we can discuss. So anyway, I'm looking at the colossal ship and now I have to figure out how to get onto it. That's when I see a bunch of people carrying supplies onto it and I think, great, I'll just pretend like I'm working on the ship and carry on some supplies. So I walk over to the supplies and I pick up a box and I head up to the ramp to enter the gigantic ship. And then I find myself on the ship, but I start to feel claustrophobic and I'm thinking, for such a big ship, these hallways are really narrow. It was then that I was considering writing a complaint to the makers of the ship, but I figured they'd have their hands full with complaints after it sinks and they wouldn't care that I thought the hallways were narrow. So I follow the line of workers until we make our way to a storage room where I drop off the supplies. The other workers head back to get more supplies, but I just noped out of there and found the nearest staircase, and when I see it, I think, man, this is where Jack and Rose ran up to avoid drowning, only for Jack to wind up freezing to death because he didn't want to try to use all the floating dead bodies as a raft. But then I realized that Jack and Rose weren't real people and they didn't actually go up the staircase. But then I wondered if maybe there could have been people similar to them and that maybe their similar versions had run up and down that staircase. So I make my way up to first class, and I know you're curious about what it looks like, but instead of describing it, you should know that everything looks just like James Cameron's version of the movie. So now that I successfully made my way aboard the Titanic, I had to find my time-traveling friend. That is, unless he didn't make it and wound up dying beforehand, and then I would never see him again and I would just be some lonely dude aboard the Titanic. So I walk all around, but I don't see him anywhere. So I go out to the balcony, and that's when I see everyone waving goodbye and I realize the boat is departing. Everyone looks so happy waving to their loved ones, and I couldn't help but think how sad they would soon be when they realized the ship had sunk and they would never see them ever again. And then, maybe it was all of the time travel, or maybe it was the bubble bath that finally opened up my heart, but I felt a tinge of empathy, like real empathy. I felt sadness that all these people on the ship were about to get themselves painted onto the Atlantic Ocean. But then, I realized that I could just leave whenever I wanted and that none of this really affected me all that much, and so I went back to not empathizing. Funny how that keeps working out in my favor. And that's when I realized that I don't have a room, and I don't know where I'd go to sleep at night if I couldn't find my buddy by the end of the day. But then I wonder if my buddy had actually bought a ticket and not just snuck in like me. I bet he did. He was always more prepared than I was with this whole time traveling thing. But while I was waiting, I figured it couldn't hurt to meet a pretty girl on the Titanic and, you know, make love to her and maybe have a nice place to stay. So I start searching the ship, and that's when I embody my inner Jack as I look for my Rose. But it was very difficult finding anyone in first class who didn't look like Kathy Bates. Now I gotta say, that comment is not a knock on Kathy Bates as an actor. And I know this is the second reference I've made about her if you're keeping track and remember that Misery reference. I think she is a great actress. But in the looks department, she just isn't my type, you know? I mean, That isn't to say that if I weren't super intoxicated, I wouldn't make a pass at her. But I wasn't super intoxicated. It was just a bummer that there were so many women who looked like Kathy Bates, but not enough that looked like Kate Winslet. But I didn't give up. I couldn't give up. I'm the guy who slept with a cavewoman and had a sort of three-way in 1940s Los Angeles. And if I could do both of those things, then I could certainly find a lonely woman on the Titanic to bunk with for the night. And that's when I spotted her. She had curly blonde hair and red lips. Although, is it even necessary to describe the color of one's lips since everyone's lips are red? Except for when you freeze to death, then your lips turn blue. I know that from my time with the Donner Party and from watching James Cameron's Titanic. So I go up to the red lip lady and I say howdy, and then I turn away because I'm so embarrassed that I once again said howdy, and it was at that moment in time that I decided I would never say howdy again, not even as a joke. But then, to my surprise, she says howdy back, and I realize that she's actually from the South, and when she hears me say howdy, she thinks I'm from the South as well, and that's when I knew I was so in. But before I continue to flirt with her, I had to find out if she was dating someone on the ship, because if she was, I'd probably not even bother with her because I didn't want to get into some sort of duel with another guy, especially on this gigantic Titanic. So I ask her if her boyfriend or husband is aboard, and she tells me she just broke up with her boyfriend, and I say, I am so sorry. But I'm secretly the opposite of being sorry because I knew that not only was I going to have some Titanic sex, but that I was also going to have a nice place to stay. But I had one question in mind, one question that I might never know the answer to. Did this red-lipped woman think I had BDE? Because I certainly didn't want to hit on her if she didn't think I did. But then I thought, does it really matter if she doesn't think I have it if she still sleeps with me? And then I decide that yes, it does matter. But then I ask her if she's on the ship with family or anything, and that's when she tells me she's on it all alone. And I gotta be honest. It turned me off that she was on the ship alone because I couldn't help but wonder why nobody wanted to travel with her. Then I start wondering why her boyfriend broke up with her and why she didn't have any friends. Was she less desirable than I thought at first glance? No, I was being crazy. This girl was obviously Kate Winslet beautiful, and I shouldn't be deterred by the fact that she was here alone. If anything, it should make it all better. Yeah, I mean, there weren't any obstacles. But then, I wondered how I'd feel if she were married to a soldier overseas. Would that make me more interested in her? But then I stopped myself from thinking about that because I didn't want to realize I was some sort of freak or something who only liked dating soldiers' wives. So then I ask her if she'd like a drink and she says, yes. And I say, great, where's the bar? So the red lip lady leads me to the bar and we get some champagne and I think, well, this is a great way to start off our very short relationship. After the champagne, she takes me to a shuffleboard court. Is it called a court? My first thought as we got there was, this is the sort of fun they had on the Titanic? And my second thought was, were women allowed to play shuffleboard back in 1912? And then I hear a voice that says, room for one more? And that's when I glance back and I see my time-traveling buddy, and I give him a big hug, and he gives me a big hug, and my first thought was, well, should I still try to have sex with this red-lipped woman even though now I would have a place to stay? My second thought was, yes, I should. And so I introduced my buddy to the woman, and at that point of time, we realized we hadn't given each other our names, so she asked me my name, and I tell her it's Austin Powers because, look, at this point of time, I just couldn't think of another name, and I figured it really didn't matter what I told people anyway, especially because she would most likely wind up freezing to death in a few days anyway. But then I stop myself and I wonder if there was a better chance of her drowning before she froze to death. But then I stopped that train of thought because I knew that it really wasn't important because she was a woman in first class and that she would most likely be saved anyway. But then the red lip lady looks over at my time traveling buddy waiting for his name. And that's when he says he's Al Capone and I think, my buddy is just like me. And I wondered if that meant we would be best friends forever. But I didn't want to appear too desperate, because men don't want to be best friends with desperate men. So I asked the red-lipped woman if we can meet up for dinner, and she says yes. And then I tell her to please excuse me because I hadn't seen my friend in a very long time. So I leave the woman, and I hang out with my time-traveling buddy. He tells me that he came here straight from Pompeii, so it's as if we just saw each other. Then I tell him all of the adventures I had gone on since we last saw each other, including the time I rubbed shit on his butt. And that's when his eyes light up and he remembers that moment and is shocked to find out that I was the one who made him super embarrassed during Napoleon times. Then he says it's funny because he doesn't remember putting the Napoleon thing on the list for things for me to fix. And I say that's probably because I changed everything and that he wouldn't remember it. So my buddy and I spend the next 2 hours trying to figure out how time travel works when there was more than one person involved in the matter. But we decide all that matters is our current reality because it's what's right in front of our faces. And then I tell him I like the jib of his jab, and he tells me he likes the jib of my jab. And then he asks me if I ever went back to prehistoric times to check in on my cave baby. So I tell him I went to Woodstock and tripped on acid, and after that, I either went back in time and checked in on my cave baby, or I hallucinated it. And then he nods as if he had done something very similar. And then I tell him all about my other adventures, specifically the threesome that I had in 1944, and I could tell he was jealous, which made me feel really good about myself. Why is that? Why do we feel better about ourselves when other people are jealous? Is it because it validates our own lives and makes us more confident in our choices? Either way, it made me feel really good about myself that my buddy had never been able to pull off a threesome back in time. That's when I wondered if I was the only person ever to have a threesome while traveling through time. I mean, as far as I knew, he and I were the only time travelers to ever exist, so if he hadn't yet, then I probably was. And it was at that very moment that I knew I would tell the story, because if I were ever going to be the only person to ever have a time-traveling threesome, I knew I had to share it with the world so that a whole bunch of people would be jealous of me. And I can tell, even though I'm here right now and you're all over the world, that you're all jealous. The other reason I made this podcast is that I'm very afraid of getting Alzheimer's, and I thought if I ever did develop the disease, it would be like my very own notebook. But instead of it being a love story between Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams, it would be a love story between me and various women throughout time. And also freeing the Jews and African Americans. And then my time traveling buddy tells me he wants me to meet someone, and I say, cool, what time period are we going to? And he tells me that the friend is on the ship, and my first thought was, oh, so I'm just another friend of his? And my second thought was, I hope my buddy likes me more than this other guy. So I ask him where this friend is, and he tells me he's in a cabin, and so my buddy leads me down the narrow hallway towards the cabin in the distance. And if I had the ability to go back in time and tell myself to do one thing, I would tell myself to not go into that cabin on that fateful day. Wait, I do have the ability to go back in time and do that. But everything wound up turning out sort of okay in the long run, so there's no need for me to go back in time and prevent this horrific thing from happening. I mean, if everything didn't wind up sorta okay, then I wouldn't be telling the story, would I? Anyway, my buddy and I make our way down the narrow hallway, and all I'm thinking is, God, this wallpaper is awful! And then I thought, I'm glad this ship sunk so that people wouldn't have to look at that wallpaper for decades. Or, you know, however long the ship sailed for. If the Titanic hadn't sunk, would it still be sailing today? No, certainly not. But it would have been going for decades, I suppose. I could see by like 1935 or something, parents would bring their kid on the Titanic and the kid would be like, ugh, the Titanic again? This ship isn't even special. And then the dad would probably smack the kid because it was 1935 when it was acceptable to smack your kid. And then the kid would say how much he hates his father, and the father would tell him to keep talking if he wanted more smacking. And then the kid would pretend like he was done talking, but then mutter something subordinate under his breath, and his father would catch wind of it and then take off his belt and really punish him. So I guess when you look at it, it's probably a good thing the Titanic sunk. Anyway, we were walking through the hallway, step by step, inch by inch, towards the room that would forever change my life. Another step, and another step, another inch, and another inch, slowly traversing through that hallway. Wait, where was I? Oh yeah, I was in the hallway, making my way to the cabin, inch by inch, step by step. And then we open the door, and he tells me to take a seat, and so I do. And he pours me some whiskey, and I hate whiskey, but I didn't want my buddy to think I was some sort of bastard bitch, so I pretended to drink it, and when he looked away, I spilled it on the ground in the corner, and I didn't feel bad at all about the vandalism because I knew that in just a few days, the ship would be underwater anyway, so there was no point in feeling bad about it. So my time-traveling buddy leans in and tells me he's sorry. And I ask him what he's sorry for. And then a young man appears. But he isn't just some young man. He's actually the younger version of my buddy by like 20 years. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't get it. And he's like, I'm gonna explain it. And I'm like, all right then, explain it. But before he explains anything, the younger version of him holds me down, and my first thought was, is this what Marty McFly's mom felt in the car that fateful day? And my second thought was, wow, his hands are really soft. And then the older version of my buddy grabs my wrist and takes my time traveling watch off and hands it to his younger self, who puts it on, and I say, hey, that's mine! But neither of them respond to it. They just act like I didn't say anything. Which, to be quite honest, I found to be super rude. I mean, it's one thing to hold me down and steal my invaluable time traveling device, but it's another to just completely ignore me. So then I say, look guys, if you're gonna rob me like this, can you at least explain everything? And then the older time traveler, who used to be my buddy but was now my nemesis, tells me that this was all fate. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. Then he goes on to tell me that he's really from Titanic times, and that's why his younger self is on the ship, and that in some other sort of timeline, I had gone back on the Titanic to find some women to sleep with before it crashed and sunk into the water, and when I was there, I had met the younger version of himself, and we wound up hitting it off, and I tell him all about my watch because apparently I was very drunk, and then the younger self had stolen it from me and abandoned me on the Titanic right before it sunk, and that's how he had originally retrieved the time-traveling device. And at that point, I'm just totally confused. So I ask him if he knew all along that he stole the watch from me on the Titanic. And he looks at me like I'm some sort of idiot. And he tells me that when he was younger, that he was the one who stole it from me on the Titanic. And then I ask, so you never found the watch in the park? And he doesn't even answer. He just laughs at me, which is such a douchey move. So anyway, what I could piece together is that at some point in my initial travels in a different timeline, I had gone back to the Titanic and the younger version of my nemesis stole my watch and then abandoned me on the Titanic. And then because he had the time-traveling device, he traveled through time and that's when I spotted him in the Renaissance, forever altering our futures. So then he had to make sure that I went back on the Titanic so that his younger self could get my watch again, or else he'd never have the time-traveling device in the first place. And then none of this would happen and we'd enter some sort of time paradox and destroy the world or something. I don't know. I don't really get it. But whatever the case, now his younger and his older self had my watch, and I was screwed. But I had one question, and for some reason, I don't know why I thought about it, but I asked him that if he's from 1912, how was he able to go into his future to the 1920s and stop Prohibition from being repealed? And then he says something really mean. And I don't want to tell you every word he said, because if I do, I'm going to cry right now. And I don't want to be like Diane Keaton and Something's Gotta Give when she's typing the play and crying the whole time. But basically, he says he had continued to live his life into the future and didn't just binge time traveling like I was doing. And so he actually made his way into the 1920s. And now I'm thinking like, dude, you just stole my watch and ignored me and now you're trying to invalidate my way of time traveling? Like, how dare he? And then the older nemesis looks to his younger self and tells him to make sure he goes back to Rome during the Renaissance so that I'll spot him leaving and then to make his way to Pompeii before it gets destroyed, and to give me a list of things to change and to meet him back on the Titanic in order to finish this time loop. Now look, if you're trying to figure out how this whole time traveling with different timelines works, I can't really help you out that much. All I know is my singular reality. I mean, there could be a bunch of other timelines being created simultaneously where everything winds up different. Or there might just be this one timeline, I don't know. And then my older nemesis starts inputting numbers into his device and tells his younger self how to operate it. And that's when I lunge for the watch, but the two dudes hold me back. And look, if there was only one nemesis, then I totally could have taken him. But there are two of them, and that's the only reason I was overpowered. Like, seriously, I could have taken one of them out. What? What, you don't believe me?
After all the honesty I've given you through this entire story,
you can't even have the decency to believe me when I tell you I could have taken one of them out? So anyway, unfortunately, I fail getting my watch back, and both of them are about to time travel out of there when I stop them and I say, at least give me the courtesy of telling me the name of the man slash men who bested me. And my nemeses look at each other for a second, and then they look at me, and at the same time they say, Alvy Hornsberry. My first thought was, How could I get bested by two men named Alvy Hornsberry? And my second thought was, well, I didn't really have a second thought because they instantly disappeared, leaving me alone to die on the Titanic. So, I guess you could say I finally got caught. And really, when you think about it, I got caught at the worst possible time. On the Titanic, just days before it would hit an iceberg and a bunch of people would either freeze to death or drown. I guess some of the people also died from blunt force trauma from parts of the boat hitting them or having to jump off the ship into the ocean. Did you know that if you jump into the water from high enough that it feels like cement? I don't know that firsthand because I would be dead if I did, but I saw it on a documentary somewhere at some point of time. Or maybe somebody just told me it in passing and I decided it was fact and I just decided to keep telling people the information as if it were fact without my actually knowing if it were true or not. Anyway, now I was in a pickle. A big pickle. But I had a few aces up my sleeves. For starters, I still had that dinner date and I didn't want to miss it because for some reason, I was feeling super horny and I also figured I had at least a few days before the ship sunk. So I decided to head to the dining area and that's where I spot the red-lipped girl. So we have dinner and the food's actually quite good, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I could have because I was feeling a lot of anxiety. Not over the fact that I would soon die, but because I wasn't sure if I'd actually be able to nail this girl because there was just something off about her. I mean, sure, she had red lips, but everything else didn't seem that normal. So we finished dessert and I'm about to ask her if she wants to go back to her cabin or Alvy's cabin. But then she asks if I want to play another game of shuffleboard and I'm thinking, we have bigger fish to fry than play shuffleboard. Like, this ship is about to hit an iceberg and I don't have a time traveling device to save my life. But of course, I didn't say that to her because I didn't want to scare her. Instead, I say, why don't we head back to my cabin and drink some whiskey? And she says, yeah, okay. So we head down the narrow hallway with the awful wallpaper, step by step, inch by inch, until finally, we reach the cabin and she comes in and we drink some whiskey and yada yada. She rejects me as I make my move and then she leaves and I'm all alone and horny. And that's when I decide I should probably do something about this ship sinking. But first, I needed to sleep because I was tired and full, and I wasn't going to be saving anyone's lives without a good night of sleep. So I go to bed, and I actually have a wonderful night of sleep. I don't know if it was the gentle rocking from the icy Atlantic Ocean, or that I was just super tired from having binged all the Titanic movies, but I'll tell you one thing. The architect of the Titanic may not know how to wallpaper his ship, but he certainly knows how to pick out mattresses. But then I realized that the architect probably wouldn't pick out either. But then I wondered if architects even made boats. I know architects make buildings, and a boat is basically a building on water, so I assume an architect handles that, right? But it's also a machine. Do architects design machines? Would it be an engineer? I mean, certainly an engineer wouldn't be picking out the wallpaper of the ship. And then I realized that there were probably several different people that were helping design this boat. Either way, the combination of a comfy bed and gentle rocking led to an amazing night of sleep. When I woke up, I glanced at my watch to see what time it was, but then I realized I had it stolen and I remembered that I was pretty much doomed to die. But now, with a good night of rest, I would find the captain and tell him he was heading straight into an iceberg and I would save the day and my life. And the lives of everyone else who happened to die. But how? How would I find the captain? I mean, I didn't even know what he looked like. From all the Titanic movies, I gathered he was an old man with gray hair and a gray beard, but a lot of the people on the ship looked like that, so it really didn't help me that much. But then I figured he probably had a captain's hat on, but do captains mingle with everyone else on the ship or do they stay in their quarters? No. They must mingle because he does in the movie, and movies never lie. So I walked through the ship saying, Captain? Captain? Anyone seen the captain? But unlike all the other times in my journeys through space and time, it didn't work. The captain didn't suddenly come up to me. Instead, I was just some fool shouting out, Captain? Captain? Anyone seen the captain? And that's when it started to sink in, that I might be on the Titanic when it crashes. And if that were the case, I had to be smart about everything. I could hide in a lifeboat right now, but then if someone saw me hiding in it when shit hit the fan, they might just throw me off of it. Instead, I decided it would be smart to prepare now by stealing some wooden chairs from the deck and make myself a little raft that would save me from the icy Atlantic waters. But then I wondered that if I actually did do that, would a lifeboat actually come back and save me? I mean, maybe not. Rose might have just gotten really lucky.
No, I couldn't let myself get all doom and gloom. I had to think about everything differently. I couldn't just admit defeat so soon. The ship was still floating. It hadn't crashed yet. But I didn't know what day we would crash because just like every other time, I hadn't done my research. Anyway, I head to the deck and I spot a wooden chair. So I pick it up and I haul it to my room when one of the workers stops me and asks me what I'm doing. And so I promptly yell at the guy and tell him I'm a very successful businessman and I'll have him fired if he doesn't get out of my face this very second. So the guy backs off and I continue to lug the chair to Alvy's cabin, but then once I get in there, I'm feeling wiped out from all of the work. So I look through Alvy's closet and I find an old-timey bathing suit and I put it on and it fits well enough. And so I go back to the deck and I sunbathe. I mean, it was pretty cold, but I figured, when else would I be back on the Titanic and have the chance to do this? So I wind up falling asleep because of the gentle rocking, and then I realize it's dinner time. So I go to the dining area to eat when I spot the red-lipped girl and I figure, well, how about we give this another go? So I convince her to have dinner with me again and she agrees, and after dessert she asks if I want to play shuffleboard again, and I mean, by this point of time, I am completely turned off because I really didn't want to sleep with someone who was obsessed with shuffleboard. But then I figured, I didn't want to die not having had sex one last time. So I said, sure, let's play some shuffleboard. So we go up to the deck and try to play shuffleboard, but it's way too dark to play. So she says, how about we try again tomorrow? And I'm thinking, lady, there might not even be a tomorrow because we're going to hit an iceberg and drown slash freeze to death. Anyway, I ask her if in the meantime she wants to come back to my place for some whiskey. And she says no. And that's when I knew why her and her boyfriend broke up and why she didn't have any friends aboard the ship. Because she sucks. So I go back to my cabin and I pass out and I wake up at some point in the morning the next day. Now, just so all of you know the time frame, I boarded the Titanic on the 10th and the ship ends up crashing on the 14th. And right now it's the 12th. But at the time, I had no idea when we'd crash. So I figured I would try again to find the captain, but this time I wouldn't give up until I did. So I scour the ship, searching and searching and searching until I find him in the atrium. And you know what? It was actually very easy spotting him because he was wearing a captain's uniform and the hat. I guess I just hadn't really tried that hard the first time. And so I hurry up to him and I say, Captain, you've got to watch out for icebergs. And he looks at me and he starts talking. But he has this super high, squeaky voice. And I'm going to be completely honest. I didn't listen to a word he said because it was just so jarring to hear that voice come out of the captain's mouth. So after he talks, I have to ask him to repeat himself. And so he repeats what he just said. But again, I'm just thinking about the squeaky voice. So I just say, listen, dude, I'm from the future and you're gonna hit an iceberg and the Titanic is going to sink. And then he grabs me by the shoulders and he says in his squeaky voice, this ship is unsinkable. And then I'll never forget what he said next. He said, why don't you go and play some shuffleboard? And now I'm just completely baffled by everyone's obsession with shuffleboard. Like, it isn't that fun of a game. It's like curling, but without any of the goofiness. Which really, if you're just a passive fan of curling, the only reason you watch it is because it's an incredibly goofy sport. You have people sort of skating with brooms. It's kind of like if Cinderella decided to play a sport. So now I realize there's no stopping the inevitable. That iceberg wasn't going to move, and the captain wasn't going to change his course. So all there was left to do was to try one last time to sleep with the red-lipped woman who had now rejected me twice. So I go to the shuffleboard section and I find her there playing and I ask her if she'd like to have dinner with me again and she says yes, and so we have dinner again. And now I'm thinking, this is my longest relationship in years, other than the babysitter and my cavewoman, and we hadn't even kissed yet. So we finish dinner and I ask her if she wants to go back to my cabin and I give her a little smile. You know the smile. The smile that says, let's make love before the ship sinks and we all drown slash freeze to death. And that's when she tells me that she's saving herself for marriage. And I say, fine, will you marry me? And she asks to see the ring and I tell her the ring is waiting for us in New York. But then she questions how that could even be possible. And that's when I give up and go back to Alvy's cabin alone again and have another great night of sleep again. The next day, I decide to just find any woman who would sleep with me because I really didn't want to go down with the ship without having one more woman go down on me. And that's when I spot a woman smiling at me who looks like Kathy Bates and I figure,
Well, all right then. I guess we're doing this. So I invite her up to my cabin and we definitely do not have sex. Like, not at all. It didn't happen, so stop asking me about it. No, I did not caress her little mustache hairs and hold her tightly throughout the night. I didn't do any of that because we didn't wind up having sex or anything, and that's that. And then it was April 14th, and by this point of time, I'm like, okay, let's just hit the iceberg already because all of this shuffleboard is getting super tedious. So I spend most of my day just hanging out by the ledge, looking at the Atlantic Ocean, at what soon would be my grave. And I couldn't help but think about how much I hated my nemesis. Not only did he steal my time machine, but he also made me go back in time and right all these wrongs that he didn't really care about my fixing. And it just seemed like some really mean thing to do to me when I could have just been having more fun. And to top it off, he made me like him too. That seemed like the cruelest thing of all. You know, if I had been betrayed by just some guy, then it would have been one thing. But to be betrayed by my best friend just really made me feel bad about myself and totally lowered my self-esteem. I couldn't help but think about the babysitter and Socrates and my cave child. I thought about my 1940s house and car and wondered whatever happened to them. I thought about Shakespeare and wondered if he had some sort of stomach disorder because that wasn't normal smelling poop. I thought about the Pharaoh and if Moses wound up killing him in front of everyone. I thought about Jefferson Davis and hoped he would live in infamy forever. I thought about that scumbag ultimate frisbee player and hoped he would burn in hell. But most of all, I thought about my Lambo and how it just got lost somewhere in 2010 and how I would never drive it ever again. I mean, sure, it only had a CD player, but it still drove extremely well and I looked super cool while driving it. God, I wasted so much money in my travels. So much money. And now I was gonna die on the Titanic and nobody would ever know how rich I got and how many women I had slept with throughout various times in history. It's a strange feeling knowing you're gonna die. I wonder what percent of people have the ability to contemplate their lives and existence in the moments before their deaths. Certainly these people were all about to question their lives since the ship would take a few hours to sink. But would they actually be contemplating life and death? Or would they just be more focused on surviving? Did it take more than hitting an iceberg to get people to contemplate death? Like, at what point did Jack and Rose stop thinking about surviving and start thinking about dying? Anyway, the sun set and I moved to the front of the ship. Bow the ship? Is that what it is? The bow? And I thought, well, if this is the night that we hit the iceberg, might as well see it happen because that would be pretty cool. And as I stood there, I see a young, happy couple holding hands and watching the ocean in front of us. And the only thing I could think about was how lucky they were to be able to have sex one more time before their miserable lives ended. I mean, at least they didn't have to have sex with a Kathy Bates lookalike. Not that that's what I did, because the Kathy Bates woman and I certainly did not have sex or do anything sexual at all. And then I thought about the squeaky voice captain and what a doofus he was for not believing some crazy guy on his ship who said he was from the future and who came back in time to warn him about the Titanic sinking. I wonder when the water rushes in and freezes slash makes him drown, if he'll think about me and how foolish he was for ignoring me. And then I see it. I see the iceberg. Well, the tip of it at least. But everybody knows the tip is better than the shaft anyway. And as I spot the iceberg, so does the captain because the ship swerves and for a moment, it looks like we're gonna be saved. But it turns out to only be one fleeting, hopeful moment. And then the ship struck the iceberg. And my first and second thoughts were, fuck. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe and rate the podcast to help me get more of the positive attention I so sorely need. Follow the show on Instagram at Time Traveler's Guide Podcast and me at Anonymous Time Traveler 69. New episodes out Thursday nights at 8.